Blog Talk Radio.
Shelly Nunchucks with the Shelly Nunchuck Show. Yes, it's Friday night. It could be many different times and many different time zones. I'm actually still in Eastern Standard Time. It's 11 p.m. I actually should be in bed because Saturday mornings I usually get up for the film set of Valkyr, and we're really getting deep into filming. And we've got one more scene to the battle scene. We're going to have to work our butts off before we even get to the battle scene. I'm going to have to really buckle down on that, I know. But anyway, I'd like to dedicate a show tonight. And in the martial arts world, it was a very, very great man. And I'm going to try to, I'm not an expert on this guy, even though I love him a lot and I know I do know a lot about him, but I'm going to bring up the Wikipedia thing, and I hope to be a god that this stuff is right on here, because I know people in the martial arts world are going to be kicking my butt if I don't get these things as close as possible. Tomorrow is the anniversary of the death of Bruce Lee, which has been 40 years. And there's been a lot of speculations and stuff, but we, you know, I mean, I'm a spiritual person, and, you know, I believe in God, and I read about Buddhism and stuff, but people, the reality is, what I want to say, and no disrespect to any martial arts fans or to disrespect Bruce Lee, and all the speculation and people want to romanticize how Bruce Lee died and saying, you know, with all this stuff going, like people wanted to kill Bruce Lee and all those things. I don't know the correct name for it. It had something, I don't know if it's called an edema or something to do in his brain, but it's something that had happened in his brain when he had, right before he passed away, because I think he actually passed away in the hospital. I could have that wrong, but that exactly, something like, I think, E-D-E-M-A. I don't know the correct term, the correct spelling, but no one murdered him because it was something that he had taken that caused his death. I think he went into a coma and stuff, and everybody's saying all this stuff. But the reality is, if you listen to Chuck Norris, even in the Jackie Chan International fan letter, there was something written how Bruce Lee died. And, you know, I mean, even with what happened with Brandon Lee, which has been about 20 years since Brandon Lee had passed away, because it seems like something about three, you know, in that year. So it was, as a lot of people know, that Brandon is actually buried right next to his father, a graveyard, in, I believe, out in California. But I'm going to dedicate tonight's special show. I think it's just going to be a half hour to Bruce Lee, to honor him. And I'm going to bring up the Wikipedia. Now, I know that he was born here in America, and he actually, you know, his parents moved back to China. So I'm going to read a little bit stuff about Bruce Lee, because I actually have some followers that are not martial artists, and they do like to hear some stuff that I like to talk about. And I'm hoping this stuff is right, because, you know, anybody can update anything on Wikipedia unless they lock it. So I don't know. I'm just going to read stuff here off of Bruce Lee, and I'll bring up, if there's an IMDb page on Bruce Lee, I'll pull it up, and I'm going to try to answer messages as I go. I'm a little bit tired here, so I have the chat room up, and also the telephone numbers to call in is, let me check here, because I'm bouncing back and forth. There's two call-in numbers, and, you know, it's the toll-free number is 877-907-7217, 877-907-7217 is one of the numbers, and the other sign-in one is to call in. If you'd like to say hi, if you'd like to do a dedication to Bruce Lee, 347-989-1473, 347-989-1473. So either one of those numbers, if you feel like calling in. I know a lot of people are probably out partying and everything, whatever, or the other half of the world could be sleeping, or people, you know, it depends on where it is. If you're in China or on the other side of the world, in Asia, you could be getting up in the morning and stuff. And so I want to pull up some information on Bruce Lee, and I'm going to read it to everyone here. And I know I butcher names and stuff, and my Boston accents, I kind of talk funny. I will spell things out. Bruce Lee actually was born Lee Jun Fan, November 27th, 1940, and his passing was July 20th, 1973. Bruce Lee was a Chinese-American martial artist, Hong Kong action film actor, martial arts instructor and filmmaker, the founder of Jeet Kune Do. Lee was the son of a Cantonese opera star, Lee Hui Chun, C-H-U-E-N. He is widely considered by commentators, critics, media, and other martial artists to be one of the most influential martial artists of all time and a pop culture icon of the 20th century. He is often credited with helping to change the way Asians were presented in American films. Lee was born in Chinatown, San Francisco. Okay, I was right on that. It's the way that's written, it says 27 November 1940, so it's November 27, 1940, to parents from Hong Kong, and was raised in Kowloon with his family until his late teens. He was introduced to the film industry by his father and appeared in several films as a child actor. Lee moved to the United States at the age of 18 to receive his higher education, and it was during this time that he began teaching martial arts. His Hong Kong and Hollywood-produced films elevated the traditional Hong Kong martial arts film to a new level of popularity and acclaim, sparking a surge of interest in Chinese martial arts and the elevated tradition Hollywood martial arts films to I guess I already read that. I'm half asleep. Chinese martial arts in the West in the 1970s. The direction and tone of his films changed and influenced martial arts and martial arts films in Hong Kong and the rest of the world. He is noted for his roles in five feature-length films. Lo Wee's The Big Boss. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be disrespectful. Lo Wee, I think, W-E-I, The Boss, 1971, and Fist of Fury, 1972. Way of the Dragon, 1972, directed and written by Lee. Warner Brothers Enter the Dragon, 1973, and The Game of Death, 1973, both directed by Robert Klaus. Lee became an iconic figure known throughout the world, particularly among the Chinese, as he portrayed Chinese nationalism in his films. He initially trained in Wing Chun, but later rejected well-defined martial arts styles, favoring instead the use of techniques from various sources in the spirit of his personal martial arts philosophy, which he dubbed Jeet Kune Do, the way of the intercepting fist. Lee held dual citizenship of Hong Kong and the United States. He died in Kowloon Tong on July 1973, at the age of 32. And I'm trying to get some more information to pull up here. Oh, I'm just scrolling down here, see if this is, okay. Early life was born, once again, it says 27 November 1940, at the Chinese hospital in San Francisco's Chinatown. According to the Chinese zodiac, Lee was born both the hour and the year of the dragon, which, according to tradition, is a strong and fortunate omen. His father, Lee Ho Chun, was Chinese, and his mother, Grace Ho, was half Chinese and half Caucasian. Grace Ho was the daughter of Ho Kum Tong and the niece of Sir Robert Hu Tong, both notable Hong Kong businessmen and philanthropists. Bruce was the fourth child of five children, Bobby Lee, Angus Lee, and Peter Lee, and Robert Lee. Lee and his parents returned to Hong Kong when he was 3 months old. Lee's Cantonese birth name was Lee Xian Fun. The name means return again. It was given to Lee by his mother, who felt he would return to the United States once he came of age. Because of his mother's superstitious nature, she had originally named him Siphon, which is a feminine name meaning small phoenix. Well, small phoenix? Actually, to tell you the truth, there was a film I did see. It was a black and white film, and you know how Bruce Lee does that thing where he wipes his nose? He actually did that as a little kid. So you can actually, really can call him a small phoenix. The English name Bruce is thought to have been given by the hospital attending physician, Dr. Mary Glover. We have three other Chinese names. Oh my gosh, I'm going to try to pronounce these. Li Yongjing, family clan name. Li Yongjin, which he used as a student name while he was attending LaSalle College, and his Chinese screen name, man, it's so hard for me to pronounce these names. Li, it's X-I-A Long. The Long means little dragon. Man, I gotta learn how to pronounce these names. I don't want to sound like an idiot live on the air. Li's given name, Wan Jun San, was originally written in Chinese as it shows a symbol here, so I can't show you. However, the Jun, Chinese character, was identical to part of his grandfather's name. Hence, the Chinese character for Jun and Lee's name was changed to the Hanuman instead to avoid naming taboo in Chinese tradition. And it goes to naming Lee's father. Lee Ho Chun was one of the leading Cantonese opera and film actors at the time and was embarking on a year-long opera tour with his family on the eve of the Japanese invasion of Hong Kong. Lee Ho Chun had been touring the United States for many years and performing at numerous Chinese communities there. Although many of his peers decided to stay in the United States, Lee Ho Chun returned to Hong Kong after Bruce's birth. Within months, Hong Kong was invaded, and Lee lived for 3 years and 8 months under Japanese occupation. After the war ended, Lee Ho Chun resumed his acting career and became a more popular actor during Hong Kong's rebuilding years. Lee's mother, Grace Ho, was from one of the wealthiest and most powerful clans in Hong Kong, the Ho Tongs. She was the niece of Sir Robert Ho Tong and the patriarch of the clan. As such, the young Bruce Lee grew up in an affluent and privileged environment. Despite the advantage of his family status, the neighborhood in which Lee grew up had become overcrowded, dangerous, and full of gang rivalries due to an influx of refugees fleeing communist China for then British Crown Colony of Hong Kong. After Lee was involved in several street fights, his parents decided that he needed to be trained in martial arts. Lee's first introduction to martial arts was through his father, from whom he learned the fundamentals of Wu style Tai Chi Chiang. Okay, it talks about Wing Chun. The largest influence on Lee's martial arts development was his study of Wing Chun. Lee began training in Wing Chun at the age of 13 under the Wing Chun teacher Yip Man in 1954. After losing the fight with rival gang members, Yip's regular classes generally consisted of the forms practice Chi Sao, C-H-I-S-A-O, sticking hands, drills, wooden dummy techniques, and free sparring. There was no set pattern to the classes. Yip tried to keep his students from fighting in the street gangs of Hong Kong by encouraging them to fight in organized competitions. After a year into his Wing Chun training, most of Yip Man's other students refused to train with Lee after they learned of his mixed ancestry, as the Chinese were generally against teaching their martial arts techniques to non-Asians. Lee's sparring partner, Hawkins Chung, states, probably fewer than six people in the whole Wing Chun clan were personally taught or even partially taught by Yip Man. However, Lee showed a keen interest in Wing Chun and continued to train privately with Yip Man and Wang Shun Lun in 1955. Okay, before I go on, I'm just going to check here for some messages. See anybody that's in the chat room. Hello there. Let's see. I have a caller. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's see. I get so wrapped up in all this stuff. I love martial arts, and, you know, I am very passionate about it. Let's see. I'm going to bring someone on the air. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, is this me?
Hello?
Hi, is this me?
Is this me?
Shelly?
Yeah, this is Shelly. Who's this?
This is Lance.
Lance, cousin Lance. Hello, my cousin.
Hey, I didn't know that Bruce Lee started with Wu style Tai Chi Chuan.
Yeah, so what do you know about Bruce Lee? I mean, I'm a Jackie Chan. I know stuff about that. It's like, from what I know, he trained with Yip Man, who, you know, Wing Chun and the intercepting of the fist, and it's like I've seen many Bruce Lee films, but what do you know about Bruce Lee? So anybody out there in the, you know, out there in the martial arts world or any of my followers, like, you know, well, what do you know about it? What about him?
I don't know very much about Bruce Lee himself. I probably know a little bit more about Yip Man than I do Bruce Lee. The only thing that I do know is that Bruce Lee actually had one leg shorter than the other.
Really? I wonder, well,
yeah.
I know that we all do, I think half our body, body parts are something shorter than the other, so I think that probably could be true.
Yeah, he had one leg was actually quite a few inches shorter than the other, which made his sidekicks really difficult.
Hmm. I'll have to, like, look that up or watch some of the films because I never knew that. See? I learned something new tonight.
Yeah.
Wow. This
but,
is very strange.
Like I said, I probably know a little bit more about Ip Man than I do Bruce Lee himself. Ip Man was alive during the Japanese occupation of China. And that was a very difficult time. Even back then, still competitions, it was not unusual for competitions for somebody to die in a competition.
Mhm. Yeah, baby. Have you seen the one with Donnie Yen? The film
My Sifu is my wushu Sifu is Nick Graysman. He learned from Donnie Yen's mother. Her name is Thurston Mark.
So did he train in Boston?
No, he was over in China with them.
Oh, okay, because I know that they came over here and they were living in Boston for many years.
A lot of them ended up, a lot of the old masters ended up coming to the U.S. when they had the opportunity, including Yang Jing Ming is also out there in Boston as well, or he had started out in Boston. Anything with Donnie Yen in it, I can kind of try to follow Donnie Yen whenever I can since he's considered like a martial arts brother to my Sifu, you know?
Yeah, he's like, Donnie Yen is awesome. Like, he's really amazing. You put a bow staff or anything in his hands, watch out. Because he's actually been compared to, like, Bruce. Because he hits so fast, and the way he swings nunchucks, it's amazing. His speed has been, like, almost compared to Bruce. Even though, I mean, Bruce is very fast and such, but... You know, they've actually done that. They've actually said Donnie Yen has been compared to a little bit to Bruce Lee. It's just amazing because I think Donnie's in his 40s, like late 40s now, and he's still amazing, an amazing, amazing, talented guy. And he's got a new film coming out called The Iceman.
Never heard of it.
No, it's not out yet. It's actually, I don't know when it's actually coming out. It should, I'm going to go find his page because I got, I'm always finding all the actors and stuff. But if I look on his page, The Iceman, that should be coming out. Let's see. I think if I can find a picture of it on his page, then I'll know exactly when it's coming out because he just got done filming it. He's also doing The Monkey King. So he's playing that, and I'm trying to find, I think in his cover photos, it might show about the Iceman. And he was, like, on top of the bus. So I don't know exactly if I can find in his albums, but it's actually, it's not to get confused with the film that just came out here in America, Iceman with this murderer. It was something that Jay Giannone, a Boston actor, one of the guys that I call one of my film brothers, he was in that film. So it's different, totally, totally different film. But The Iceman, I don't know why I can't find it right now because he had tons of pictures from The Iceman. That film will come out pretty soon. But, of course, we're probably going to have to watch it on DVD here. So
one of the things I find interesting is most of the martial arts stuntmen like Jackie Chan and Sammo Hung and Jet Li, you know, they all come from the Chinese opera and they were all trained in the Chinese opera. Whereas Donnie Yen and Bruce Lee were not. They were trained by a single private individual. You know, they had their Sifu that trained them.
Yeah, you know why some of them are really good. Like, you know, Jackie's brother, Samuel's actually Jackie's brother, and Yung Bao, those three are brothers. It became because of the Drama Academy, and when Jackie, like their disciplines, he used to get hit all the time. He used to get beatings. If he didn't do a flip or anything like that, he'd get spankings and beatings. So that's probably why he's so good, because of the discipline. And he would say in the story in his book, in Jackie's book, I am Jackie Chan. And, you know, I've seen so many interviews, and Jackie, he said he'd be up at like 5:30 in the morning. They'd be training for like 8 hours, like running around and doing all these things, balancing and everything, and all these things that he did. And if you don't do it right, flips or anything, you get like hit. And I'm like, imagine, like nowadays that would probably be considered child abuse, all that stuff. But I guess that helped them.
Beating your child was pretty common. It was socially acceptable back then. You know, just not too far, even back in the 70s, I guess it was acceptable to spank your child. Of course, you could never spank your child now. They'd lock you up and put you in the jail for it.
Yeah, and then another thing, too, from something I seen, some of my friends that I met through, like, the internet and stuff, they trained in the Shaolin Temple. And I guess the discipline that I hear, they have, like, it looks like real paddles that they have, and they would hit them with it. And the discipline in the Shaolin temples, oh, it's really strict. And I was, like, looking into that. I was like, oh, imagine just to go and visit it. But I heard you have to, before you get inside, you have to sit outside for a while before you get to go even inside the temple to train. I think you can go to it. You can actually train at the Shaolin Temple, but it's kind of expensive. But, you know, just the discipline alone, I can just imagine.
I've asked about that, and what I've heard is that you just have to have enough money to pay to get inside.
Yeah, to get inside, that's true, but it's kind of like when you're doing it, because I was looking at I don't know if you know who Jason Scott Lee is. He's the guy who played in Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. That was Jason Scott Lee. I mean, he's done a lot of other films. But he was training within the last year at the Shaolin Temple, and I see my friend pitches at the Shaolin Temple, the training. It's very strict. It's very hard. It's not just like it's even beyond a dojo, but it's so strict. But the things I see, the guys that actually live there and train, the things that they can do, like they can bound themselves on spears, like when I see their performances and stuff from the Shaolin Temple, and they can get hit in their stomach and all these different things, the discipline that they go through, I don't even know if people can even, like, make it. So you may be able to pay to get in there. Hello, Lance? I think the call just dropped, so Cousin Lance, everyone, that was my Cousin Lance. Hello, Lance? Just the call dropped. He'll probably call back in, but anyway. that was unexpectedly, you know, technical difficulties. It does happen, and Lance, you're welcome to call back in. Tonight's show is dedicated, you know, to, like I says, it's dedicated to Bruce Lee. And going back to the page, so this could be Lance calling right now again. Give me one moment. Hello, caller?
Yeah.
Hi,
yeah,
this
I'm
Lance?
Here.
I'm like, hello, Lance? I'm going on, and I'm like, hey, Lance, call back in. It's live show. Technical difficulties sometimes happen, but, you know, thanks for calling in, and it's like, we should Skype sometime. It's been a very long time. When was the last time I seen you? Back in 1985?
Back when we were kids, I think I was still, I think I had just gotten my black belt in Taekwondo when the last time we saw each other.
Yeah, I didn't even know that, because back home I kept all this stuff inside, you know, about, like, martial arts and stuff. I didn't really get into it until, like, a couple years ago. I was actually training in capoeira, and then I trained for a year in Tai Chi, and it's harder than what, you know, you really can imagine. I mean, you know that, and you trained in it and stuff, so have you been training in it since then, or?
Yeah, I've, you know, in my younger years, I started with Taekwondo under Jun Ri, and then in my 20s into my early 30s, I was practicing ninjutsu under Stephen Hayes, and then in my late 30s, I started wushu with Nick Graceman, and then when I entered my 40s, I started Tai Chi under Pat Rice. So currently I'm training in the Yang style Tai Chi Huan under Pat Rice.
Wow. This is like, I never knew there was, like, martial artists in the family. I never knew her. I was like a couple of the people, and I'm like, whoa. I says, well, like, I am normal. I never knew that, and it's like, I guess technology, it's a blessing. And believe me, I'm a tech tard. I'm still trying to figure things out, you know, running this radio show. But it's kind of funny connecting through Facebook and finding people. And I was like, I think I found you through Aunt Hazel or someone. I forget how I found you. And then I was like, it was like, you do martial arts. I saw that picture with you and a sword. And I'm like, wait, he does martial arts? And I'm like, no way, because your stance and the way you're holding it. I says, you must be well advanced. And I says, you must have been doing it for years. And I'm like, this is kind of cool, because I didn't know who I took after in the family. Like, my Boston side of the family, no one was into this stuff. And I says, where do I get it from? You know, I always, like, love this stuff. I says, it's part of the Montana side. You know, you guys are all on the side of Montana. And yeah. I was like, I guess that's where I fit in. So it's like, I'm also, you know, after I get done with a film that I'm doing here, I'm playing a superhero and we're doing our own fight scene and stuff, I'm going to be actually moving back out to Montana. So that's going to be quite a, it's going to be an experience. And I hope I get to see you, you know, and maybe we can do a Skype session if you have access on the computer. Maybe we can Skype sometime.
Yeah, I got the internet here at home. I can get Skype. We just usually use our cell phones right now, and that's why I break up sometimes.
Oh, no, that's cool. You know, I can, you know, it's a lot of fun. Skype is a lot of fun. It's amazing technology. When I started doing that, I was like, oh, this is really cool, because I'm so far away from so many people, but it feels like that you're actually right there, so it's really pretty cool. And if you have you can do it on Facebook too. You can video chat off of Facebook, so that's kind of cool. And it does look like I do have another caller, so Lance, I want to keep in touch, you know, keep on touching Facebook and stuff. And you know, it's great to hear from you. Surprised me on my radio show, cuz. So, all right, you know, you can always get a hold of me on Facebook, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the evening, and we'll be talking to each other.
All right, you have a great night, and I'll talk to you later.
Okay, cuz. Bye. Night.
Bye.
Okay, looks like I have another caller on the air. Hold on for one moment. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello, Shelley. Douglas Wong.
Hi, Douglas. How are you?
Fine, fine. I just happened to catch part of your radio show, so I thought I'd give a call, see how you're doing.
Oh, I'm doing fine. Thank you for surprising me and calling him. I'm so excited. I'm never going to go to bed tonight. I'm so excited that you called in, because I wanted to do a special dedication to Bruce Lee, because,
right,
you know, he's passing and stuff, you know, for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's been 4 years. And I says, well, I'd like to do a little bit of dedication in my own way. And now I know so much about Jackie Chan. And I know some about Bruce Lee and stuff. And it's just something where, you know, I mean, anything that anybody can call in and give some information about it, I would love. If you know anything about Bruce Lee, would you be able to, you know, I have some followers that, you know, aren't into martial arts. If there's any feedback that you know about Bruce Lee, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I know a few things. I met Bruce way back when he was doing the Green Hornet series. Met him and Danny Insanto. That's his number one student, who's carrying on with his teaching now. And so he was like his first generation student. So I know most of the guys in the first generation, so they're still good friends of mine, but quite a few have passed away in the last 4 or 5 years. So, you know, so but there's a few still left around. And, yeah, they're going to have some celebration tomorrow for them, you know, in their own special way, and they'll have things up at his grave site in Seattle tomorrow also, and, you know, different things. They have different memorials going on for that. But, you know, it's just one of those days. They have to celebrate, you know, one of the greatest martial artists that ever lived, you know. So he was very talented. He was just way ahead of his own time, you know. So, you know, so many stories about him, and how there always some people always talking down on him also, saying that he never completed the system, Wing Chun, you know. That's where he studied from Ip Man in Hong Kong. But, you know, he didn't complete his whole lesson, but, you know, he had enough in his mind, his background, that he could pick up and redevelop different things, you know, and make up for the lack of the whole system, you know. But he just created so many different things. He has insight that nobody could believe. It was just so far ahead, you know, even the books that he wrote. You know, unless you had a martial art background, you couldn't understand what he was talking about. I mean, you understand the basic, but you have to read in between the lines. There was so much philosophy and so many ideas that was in between the lines and the information he was passing out. And a lot of people picked up certain techniques, but they still didn't understand the deeper meanings of it. It's only the people that has been in the martial art for a long time could they really pick up what he was talking about, you know, about his footwork, about the speed, about the different ways of using the angles, you know, how to build speed, where his strength has to come in. So there's so many things that he was so good with, you know, that he was just way ahead of his time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when your cousin talked about, he had a short, you know, yeah, he did have one leg that was shorter, but that's why he spent so much time stretching and working out and did all the conditioning of everything. So it made like he didn't have a handicap. That's what he always made himself, you know, to always be better than the next person. That's why he got to either out-muscle them, out-speed them, out-something, but, you know, he always made himself work out with everything. I mean, from the little finger all the way to his total body. I mean, he had special weights that he made up, you know, these hand grips and everything else on the, had about 60, 70 pounds on it. He would just work on it. He'd grab the whole hand and he'd work a couple of fingers at a time, small fingers. I mean, he was amazing with what the stuff he did. You know, he had a lot of training equipment and a lot of old equipment. I was at Danny Inosanto's studio in Marina Del Rey, so they have a lot of the original equipment there that was built, you know, that was prototype to many of the equipment that's being used now in the martial arts. But he made a lot of the, his student, Herb, was the one that helped put together a lot of the metal stuff, like they use for hitting to the head and stuff like that. So he was well conditioned his hand. He didn't just hit the Wing Chun Witten dummy, but he was always hitting onto different harder surface, into metal and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, he geared himself into being tip-top shape. That was his number one concern.
Well, did you ever see him work out or anything? Did you ever see him?
A couple times, you know, because he had his studio back in the days when he first, after he did the Green Hornet, he had his school in Chinatown. And that was underground, so very few people could go in there. But there was a lot of people always trying him out. They go in there and just try to see if he was that good or not. I work with a lot of his first-generation students. They were all my good friends. And when I first opened my first studio in 1973, that's when a lot of the guys came over to work out with me at that time period. That's after Bruce had passed away. And they would show me all the different techniques that they had learned from Bruce. So, you know, we exchanged a lot of techniques and saw a lot of new ideas and stuff that they were taught to them, you know, specifically. But what he did, each student, each one had a different physical limitation, or so what he would do, he'd make them beef it up, so make them really work on certain areas. Where one guy, maybe his legs were not that strong, he made him work on legs. Guy's arms were not as fast, and he made him work on speed. But he worked each individual separately to make them good for what their own body was capable of doing. You know, don't try to imitate me. Be the best what you can be. So that's the way he always trained everybody. That's why there's no one student can copy what Bruce did, but a lot of them have the idea and how to teach it, how to convey it. Because, you know, nobody can match Bruce for what he did.
Yeah, it blows me away with some of the things where every once in a while someone shows me, you know, not just the films, but even the fact is that you've probably seen the stuff with the ping pong table and him with the nunchucks and hitting pong balls, and I'm just like, it's jaw-dropping because he's that skilled and how fast he is. And then there was, did you see with the matches where he was like, I think he was, like, striking the matches with the nunchucks and hitting them. It was all in the segment thing, and I was like, I couldn't even keep track with my eyes. I couldn't follow it. That's how fast he is. And I'm like, how is it possible for a human being to be that fast?
Now, some of them, I don't know if those are the real ones or the ones, the commercials, they sort of CG put it together. See, there's a lot of stuff out there they keep claiming that Bruce did this and did this and did that, but it was not. A lot of it's stuff they put together later. That was way after he passed away. So you got to be aware of what that is. There's a lot of trickery out there. So a lot of those commercials with the one with the ping pong, that's one they made afterwards. You know, that was just done recently, even the last 5 or 6 years or so. So unless you get some old black and white films from the family, then that's different. But there's nothing like that on there. I used to have a set of all the his black and white when he trained and stuff like that back in the days. These were all the family films. So that's before they put it out in public. So I had it way long before them. Because I knew a lot of the people that were the family friends that had them. They're just James Lee. Him and his kids, was I knew the kids when they were growing up, so we were still good friends. And they had all these family films of what Bruce used to do when he was younger, when Brandon was just like 3 or 4 years old. So there's videos of him training and stuff like that when Bruce was taking him on the side, teaching him kicking and so forth. But there's a lot of old ones that you can see online now, you know, which they released maybe about 15 years ago now. But I've had that over 30 years probably, you know, back in old days.
And it's so, still, I mean, if that's older film, how did it survive? You know, it's like, it's probably like, you know, it's all different nowadays with the computers and everything. Is it still good? I mean, because it's regular film.
Some of them try to clean it up, but some of them were pretty bad. And there's some in color. There's some that I had with, what's his name? Oh, I see his face. I can't think of his name now. But it was one of the actors, James, what's his name? Oh, I can't even think. The guy playing In Like Flint. What was that movie? Can't think of his name now. But anyway, there's a lot of training stuff that they did in black, white, and in color when he was training privately. So there's a bunch of those that Bruce took that he didn't release, but now it has been released. And there's a lot of other films like that he had, you know, training different actors. What's his name? Nick, can't even think of all these guys' names now.
But
a lot of these guys, were, all the old guys that were at his funeral that were pallbearers in Seattle that carried his body there. And these were all the actors that he was training during that time period. So there are some private films that they have him, that he had training them privately that was not disclosed to the public until recently.
If like, say, you're a little bit older than me, so I know, like, see, I can only know through history about reading because I was only 3 years old. I mean, when Bruce was, you know, still alive, I mean, I was on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
But the time of Bruce's death, like, from what I was hearing and reading and stuff and seeing, you know, watching, trying to watch documentaries, at that time, they looked like, it seemed like people were trying to replace him, like, try to make films that, like, guys that look like him in films, like there was one. You know, I heard that. Is that true?
Oh yeah, there's quite a few of them. There was a couple that they tried to do his last one, that he only did maybe one third of the film. So they brought in like 4 or 5 look-alike and tried to finish the film, and some of them you can see the cutaway of his real picture in there, but you see all this fuzziness that you know they pulled it from another film and try to superimpose it in there. I mean, some of it was so bad. Then they had a bunch of different actors, like one that I worked with, I can't even think his name now, but we did Bruce Lee, the Man and the Myth, and they call him Bruce Lai. His last name is actually Ho, but they call him Bruce Lai. And he was the one that looked the closest and did the most different portion videos like Bruce did, you know, all the films he did. But he was closest to him, but, you know, nobody was exactly like Bruce. Like I say, you know, they couldn't move like him. They weren't as flexible. They weren't as fast. They weren't as strong. I mean, they gave it a good idea. Some of them use camera speed to make it look faster and different things like that. But there's a lot of ones, you know, Bruce Lee, Bruce Lee, Bruce whatever, you know, Dragon Lee. And I mean, there's like 8 or 9 of them that came out after Bruce passed away, that they try to do a series of films after him, you know, and try to capitalize on it. So that was kind of bad. But there were a few good ones. But, you know, the only good one was actually Bruce Lee, The Man of Myth, and also when Jason Scott Lee portrayed him in Dragon. So those are two best ones that I like. Yeah.
You did an amazing job to help Jason. I'm sitting there. I swear it's like Jason is so much like Bruce Lee. His mannerism, the way he sounds, I mean, it's like, even sounding nowadays, even after many years of doing the Dragon, the Bruce Lee story, even the way he sounds just like Bruce Lee. It's amazing, and you guys did a really good job on that story, on the Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. That's one of my favorite all-time movies of all time.
Yep, we worked a lot with him. I had 6 months working with him, and we put him on a special diet. You know, we start cutting his body down toward the end there after the 6 months period, you know, where we try to get his body down, sculptured, you know, just like a Bruce Lee, you know, and really get the body fat down. And another friend of one of Bruce's first generation students helped him a lot. That was Jerry Poteek. He passed away about 2 years ago, and he took over as techno advisor after. Well, my Steve was the techno advisor first. Then he got in a fight with the director, and then we all got kicked off, and then Jerry Petit got in there. And so Jerry taught him a little bit more the mannerism of what Bruce was doing, because, you know, he had a lot more, you know, daily contact with Bruce during his time period. So that helped him out also. So, you know, I always got to give credit where it's due, you know. So he was a good friend. I knew him for so long, also him and Daniel Lee, who's still alive now. He's one of the few that's still around with Danny and Santos, you know, as well as most other guys have gone by the wayside now. But Jerry Petit did a real good job also. But that was a great movie. You know, I worked a lot with him. That's where you saw most of the weapons that you saw in the beginning, when he was in the dance hall fighting and he pulled that little chain out in there. All my stuff there, and the swords, double swords by the bridge, and, you know, all the weapon stuff. That's all my stuff there. So I trained him in a lot of that kind of stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun.
That's really kind of, it's still blown away that you did one of my favorite films of all time. I'm just, it's just amazing that I get to talk to people that, you know, stuff that you did. Like, I used to watch Hercules, and, you know, you train in Kevin Sorbo, Lawless. Yep. Like, with all this connection, which is really amazing. I did have a question, though. Since I've got you on, and, you know, on the subject with Bruce Lee tonight, you know, what, it was like, okay, when he, at the time, it was just like a shock to the world. How did people, you know, get over that void? How did they start to transition into, like, the films nowadays? How did they, because, like, you know, like you said that people are trying to copy what Bruce said. How did they move away from that to get, you know, to move on?
Yeah, see, especially in Hong Kong, after Bruce sort of set a void there, was of his type, style of fighting. And so, you know, they start trying to make more people get away from the costume-type fighting movies back in the old days, like the Shaw Brothers stuff. They were trying to get more into regular fighting or boxing or technique-wise. But most of it was not good. You know, they didn't have anybody that could do it. You see a lot of these guys that came in afterwards, their technique was not as good. You know, even Alexander Fu Xin, David Chang, all these old guys from the Shaw Brothers, they just did not look the same as the fighting. And that's when these other actors came in and started getting on the scene, like Van Damme and different people like that did actual fighting here, you know, on the circuit and stuff. So they start getting more into the film, to show a little bit more realistic fighting and try to get away from the costume fighting. But they stopped that for a long time before Hidden Dragon, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon came on, before it went back to that type of costume character type thing with all the old weapons and everything else. But they stopped that for a long time, and that's why Shaw Brothers, they sort of went out of business after 1986, because they weren't doing any of that type of costume movies. You know, then other companies started doing it. That's when Jet Li started doing all his stuff. Again, a lot of those guys are good, but they couldn't match the same ideas what Bruce was doing until later on. Jet became, you know, got away from the costume type movies and started doing some of the more modern type fighting and stuff, so forth. But, you know, he did have a decent job. So I like a lot of his techniques. He did very good. Donnie Yen was come up with trying to do some of these.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have a lot of these other American actors that came on. There were all, you know, tournament fighters that came on and tried to get into the movie, like Bill Superfruit Wallace. He got in a couple movies, and then a couple of my old instructors, Tino Tulasega, Ed Parker, they all tried to get into the movies also and did a lot of their techniques. But then again, one of Ed Parker's protege became very good. That was Jeff Speakman, The Perfect Weapon. So that was a very good movie. You know, so one of the few that came up there was some really good, nice, strict fighting stuff, you know, that was clean, very good. And then Seagal came in, started doing his, you know, mixing up his Aikido, and he started mixing it up with a lot of the Wing Chun fighting, because one of his bodyguard was Randy Williams, and he was a Wing Chun stylist. And then he would start teaching Seagal some of the different Wing Chun techniques and what we call chain fighting and punching and stuff like that. So that's why a lot of that got incorporated in Seagal's later movie, which he didn't have in his earlier movies. So you see the change in style. Then they also start dabbing into the wushu style. You know, there's many of these guys that came on the scene later on that mix all these different martial artists and try to make their movies a little bit more exciting, you know. But Seagal was, you know, he has some good movies. I like Under Siege, you know, where he had the knife fighting one on the boat there. I mean, there was some great fighting there. He has some really nice techniques. So like he said, he's a true martial artist, you know. So he got a break in the movies and took it to another level. So he was very good what he does also.
Yeah. He definitely, at the time, I think it was the 80s, that's when he had his high point, wasn't it in the 80s with Seagal?
So he did quite a few good movies there, and then now these last few, you know, they're pretty bad. You know, he's still out there doing some stuff, doing some martial arts, and he's getting a lot of these rap stars and stuff he's putting in the movies, you know, trying to get publicity off of them when he's doing this and that. But, you know, he's still a good, decent martial artist, you know. But
the
action when he was younger and about 100 pounds lighter, he was moving then. But now it's a little bit different. Yeah. And he's using all these stunt doubles. And these guys, you know, they're just so skinny. You can tell when they're putting a stunt double in there, it's not him anymore. So it's kind of crazy on that part. But before, like I said, I got a lot of respect for the guy. His stuff is for real. He's good. And, you know, and a lot of these guys are getting so much older now. Ian Van Damme, all these guys are getting close to 60 now. So I haven't seen any new guys come on the scene, really. You know, that's really shocking the world, you know, bringing it up there and being like a Bruce Lee. So that I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, no, not really. Even though I did see, I don't know if you know who Tony Jaa is.
Oh yeah,
he's working with. It's kind of funny. It's a weird combination, but Tony Jaa and Dolph Lundgren in a film.
Right.
And
right.
I'm like, what? It's just a weird combination. It's like, how did they? That, do you know what I'm saying? To think, I don't know if Doc Lundgren, I don't know the whole story, if it's The Protector, another part of that, but it's just a weird combination, Tony Jaa and Doc Lundgren. You know, every time you think of Dolph Lundgren, you're thinking of the Russian guy from Rocky.
Right. He's a decent fighter also. He's pretty good. Too bad he couldn't find a younger guy, man. If him and maybe Donnie Yen, that would have been good, you know.
Yeah.
You know, somebody, you know, close to his age, you know, so or even Kong Lee, you know, was you know, Kong Lee did that one with Donnie Yen. That was a pretty good one. They had some nice fight scenes in there also. So so Tony Jiao is good. You know, just haven't seen that much of him, but some kind of language fair. He doesn't speak that well in the English, but if he got that down, he'd be doing some more, like Jet Li is doing now, too. Before they all couldn't speak English, him and Jackie, the same thing. Then they said, well, we want to become international. We got to learn the language, and that's what they did.
Yeah, and I can totally understand. It's like, you know, people say, oh, Jackie's English is not really that good, but it's like, I'm sitting there and going, I talk funny as it is with my Boston accent. I talk funny. And all these people that are all these brains saying, I can't understand Jackie, but it's like, how come I can understand when Jackie's talking in English? I can perfectly understand him, yet
oh,
all
yeah.
these people are like, I don't understand him. I says, it's patience. I think that's the one thing I have patience with when, you know, I try to understand and try to not just hear, but listen. So it's kind of like, that stuff doesn't bother me, and honest to goodness, too, with films, I would rather see a film that's subtitled, because I swear to God, I saw a film, I don't know which one it was, but they dubbed Jackie's voice, and it sounded like a surfer dude. And I was like, what? Oh, never again. I says it was so horrible, and I'm like, what does it sound like, some guy like from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure? And I'm going, that's not even how Jackie would come off if he was. You know, it was horrible, and I says, never again. I says, I will watch films in another language with subtitles. I can't handle that. Never again.
Yep, yeah, I know what you mean. That's why a lot of films are like that, and that's why sometimes it's good to see the foreign films with the regular language that they have and the subtitles underneath, so you can get you can understand their acting, but you can see their facial expression. And everything else, that's what I like about certain movies, you know, the foreign films, you know, that I get to look at. You know, I don't understand the language, but, you know, some of it is just the acting, you know. There's a different when they're doing it in their own native way. So that's what I like about that. Yeah, too bad, you know, Bruce didn't make a few more pictures before you passed away. You know, he just had those few limited ones, and that was it. You know, he would be something else, you know. And, you know, 20 years down the line, he would have been incredible, you know. So,
wonder, like, what would he have done, you know, say how much. But it's kind of like you think it's like maybe he would have done more, but do you think he probably would have had that much of an impact if he didn't pass away? It seems like with his passing, it seemed like it affected the world that much, and even to this day, and it's 40 years later. So
No, he'll have different influence on the martial art films for sure. You know, I'm sure he probably would have done some other films also, but he wanted to just do acting, not just the martial arts by itself, you know, because that would have been his way of progressing through it. You know, he just wanted to be just known as a martial artist, but, you know, just do regular serious type acting. I mean, he did good on there, you know, just like same thing as Elvis when he was doing his thing. When he was first started out, something that was pretty serious, and all everything else afterwards, just girls, you know, just all the female stuff. But other than that, I mean, he had a couple of roles that he was very serious in, you know. Like Love Me Tender, when he was doing that, we were on the black and white, but he was pretty serious in that one. And Follow the Sun, I think, or Follow the Arrow, whatever. Flaming Arrow. That was another one. He did a nice job in acting. But that's where you look at these guys. You know, they were getting away from their singing, but he was doing other things. You know, become more of a serious actor. I think Bruce Lee did the same thing. I mean, he shows so much in a lot of his movies. Different characters he acted, like an old man and the telephone guy and all this stuff. All the different characters he could have played. You know, so that's why I saw that he would have been a great actor. And then if he would have did some of those Chinese costume movies he was thinking about, but that's where he did the. All those pictures they were taking publicity for, you know, I think Shaw Brothers and all the guys were trying to get him to come over and do certain things, you know, but that never came to pass, you know. That's too bad, but you know, I would love to see him do some other things also.
Yeah, that would have been, like, really amazing, and it's, like, and it's so strange where, like, you know, I try to talk to people, you know, even with everything they say, oh, like, you know, people wanted to murder Bruce and everything, and his death was a murder, and I keep trying to tell people. I see even Chuck Norris talked about Bruce's death, and also, you know, Jack wrote it in his fan letter, because I'm part of the Jackie Chan, the fan club, and saying that, I don't know the correct term, because I was trying to say what it was. It wasn't murder. It was something where Bruce Lee had I don't know if it's really called aneurysm. It was edema or something in his brain that happened when he took some medicine, and that's what it put him into a coma. He didn't die, I don't think, at the hotel. I think it was at the hospital. And everybody's like, oh, someone tried to murder him. I go, no, that's not it. Bruce was human. That's what people don't tend to realize, even how good he is. He was just a human being. He was a man. So it's like anything can happen, and it's like, you know, medicine and stuff, you know, he's not that perfect, and people don't want to hear that. And I'm spiritual and stuff, but it's not, that's the reality of it, and people want to romanticize of how he died, and it's kind of like, it's not a mystery. The mystery solved, and just people going on it, and they think I'm wrong. I says, no, and then it's like they say, you know, with Bruce's son, Brandon, it was 20 years ago, that Brandon, you know, he died on the set. And they're saying, oh, someone's trying to kill him. I says, no, people. What happened was it was something to do with the gun. They didn't check it. It was some sort of rail bullet, and something was part of it was still lodged in the barrel, the thing that's in there, and they went to shoot it, and that's why Brandon died. Everybody's like, oh, it's all mystical. I says, no, and I don't think the gun was put away. I think it was kept out. And you know, we're not set. You have to put them away. In gun talks, you don't keep them out.
Yeah, well, what happened on the set there was that was a non-union movie. Union movie, you have people control the guns, they check the gun, they do everything. At this one movie, they didn't do it. And what was happened was a blank, and there's a wad in there. They didn't clean out the wad, and that wad is what went to his head. It punctured his head, and that's what killed him. And so what was bad was, see, Jeff Imada was the stunt coordinator for that movie. He usually checks everything, and he didn't do it that time. And so, I mean, he went away for a while. I mean, he couldn't stay there. He couldn't get his mind together for a while. I mean, it just broke him up real bad, you know. So it almost took him 6 months to recover from that. But, you know, he sort of blamed himself for that because he didn't check it. But usually everybody, you check everything. And because it was not a non-union movie, and that's what happened. You got budget. That's what happened. Same thing with my son. He was working on the Ultimate Warrior, and they had a prop man. They had the real sharp-tooth sword there, and then they had the prop. The guy didn't exchange the prop, had the real one. So the guy cut him and put 45 stitches in my son's arm, cut all the way to the bone. So,
oh, is he okay? So,
I mean, he recovered from that, but still, that's what happens. People are not careful with things. So lucky it was just a deep cut. It wasn't a bullet, you know, that went through his whole body, but that was bad enough, you know, and where he couldn't use it for almost 4 or 5 months, you know, it's really bad. And so that's why I say these guys, sometimes they're not paying attention, you know, they're getting paid, but... It's crazy. Like, we work on different movie sets or even on TV shows. We got some things. We're doing a demonstration on TV. It was myself, my wife, and James Liu. And so James and my wife was doing a two-person weapon set. It was a sword versus spear. They didn't have enough room on that stage here, so they're going to move this plant. And the guy said, no, you can't do that. That's against union rule. They had to wait an hour for a guy to come by to move it. And all we had to do is just pick it up and move it ourselves. So we couldn't do anything on the set. Nope, it's on the union. We have to do this. You have to wait for this. You have to wait for that. You got to make the request. I said, oh, man, you guys are crazy. You know, so that's the difference.
Wow.
In Hong Kong, we would have moved it, and that's it. We're going to move it if you want to. That's fine. But, you know, under union rules, you are not – that is not in your job description. You can't do it. So that's why I said it's a joke sometimes, you know. I say it takes them forever, you know. Oh, they're having lunch now, so you got to wait.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it's just all these little behind-the-scenes stuff that nobody knows about, you know. It's crazy.
I know, like, I mostly worked on, non-union sets, and it's like I do, like, I try to help out, you know, I try to put on, like, makeup on people's faces and stuff. I hit, like, you know, when if you're going to hire, like, SAG or something, there's all this red tape and everything, and it's kind of like, you know, like, with my first film, The Dishwasher, which, like, once again, I took
from the scene, the title of my film, The Dishwasher, from Dragon and Bruce Lee's story when they saw it, when they, his boss sat him down. In other words, says, you know, you pick a good life or bad life, and if you pick the bad life, I could always use a good dishwasher, and that's how I got the title for my film.
Yep.
And it's just like, you know, man, I'm rambling on here. I think I'm half asleep now. But let me tell you what my point is of bringing that up. I was like, yeah, you should smack me in the head right now, Douglas. I'm just like going on and on and just like losing my train of thought. What was I talking about? The weapons or something? Boy, I'm having a brain fart right now. This is not good live on the air. It's horrible. Oh, my gosh. But, just like everything – like with Bruce and Brandon, it's, you know, the deaths and stuff. It wasn't all mystical. It was kind of like, it was just human error.
Yeah.
And, that's basically what it is. And I keep trying to tell people, and they're like, well, you know, how do you know Shelley? And it's like, now here I have you speaking about it. You're well advanced in martial arts, and you were more into that, and here you're speaking it, and now I got even more proof. You know, I'm not talking out of my butthole here. You know, it's like,
well,
let
me give you another story.
Okay, cool.
This is after Bruce passed away. We heard he passed away. At that time, my brother had the magazine Inside Kung Fu magazine, so we were internationally everywhere. So we are always, you know, covering different articles about Bruce and so forth and following him. So when we heard he passed away, then we got calls from Hong Kong that he got shot in the back of his head. And so we said, what? Is that for what? Yeah, you know, this is what we heard. And then later on, we hear all these other stories going on that he had the aspirin reaction, and that's when the brain was swelled up, and that's where he passed away from. But that's what they said. Have you ever seen anyone in a coffin with all that stuff wrapped around his head where you couldn't see the side or the back of his head?
So, wait a minute. He was in the coffin.
Right, you see the coffin, you see how everything's all wrapped around his head and everything that's up close, you can see to the ears or anything?
Yeah,
you know,
so
how
what?
Usually you see the whole head, the whole person's head when they're in the casket. But if you look at the picture of Bruce in his coffin there, all that linen stuff is right against his head. You can't see from the ears down, so you don't know what's happening in the back of the head. So that was one of the rumors that we got when it first happened. So, you know, like I said, we don't know. We can't see behind it or whatever, you know, so we just have to rely on that. But that's the first story we heard right from Hong Kong.
Hmm.
And the other one was the Death Chuck, Death Touch or Death Monk, where Chinese master went up there and did the delay.
And it's like,
They did the delay Death Touch on him and different things like that. You know, so there's so many rumors, you know, and that was one of them that was going around also. So, but, you know, like Bruce Weiss, Linda, you know, she said it was a reaction to aspirin, you know, and that's when his brain swelled and that's what happened. And he had a bad reaction to the aspirin that was given to him.
Yeah,
but, you know, but those are the stories we heard. I said, dang, you look at that pictures of him, you know, I said, that's crazy. So you wonder, you know, like I said, we never got to see what's behind it or what was right or wrong. You know, people can still hide a lot of things. We don't know for sure. But that's the story they gave it. That's on the death certificate and everything else. So, like I said, there's many other rumors besides that. So I thought I'd just give you another one.
And will you have any more stories about Bruce? Anything? This is great. I mean, this is dedicated to Bruce. I mean, do you have anything, any other stories or anything about him?
Oh, I can't even think of any right now. Shoot, I can't relate of any right now. It's getting late for me, too.
Thank you for coming on the show. And if I find this one thing, someone made it. I don't know if you've seen it, but it showed, I'll tell you this one thing and then I'll let you go. It's a short video, a short little film, but it was taken off of different films. It shows Bruce Lee and Bruce Lee's fighting himself. And then all of a sudden there's this big statue and you see, like, I think of who's the guys, I think, see I think it's Chuck Norris turn the corner and he like bows towards Bruce Lee, and then Jet Li comes in, he bows and they like bow like their heads and stuff or whatever. And then you see like this crow flying and going, what is this, right? Then you see Brandon, and it was so good how they did this. It was a short film, and then it shows like Brandon coming towards as the crow towards Bruce, and Bruce looks at it and he looks like he's gonna cry, and it's like he just like bows his eyes, and it's this really, you thought it was gonna be this different fight film, but it was more for respect,
right,
out of the whole situation. If I find that, I'm going to post it on your Facebook wall tonight.
Okay,
I have
that.
To
yeah.
show you. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. However, it's done, it's such an honorable thing, whoever did it, and I'm going to post it on your wall tonight. You're going to love it.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that one. Yeah, that'd be nice. I'd like to see that one for sure.
Yeah, it made me bawl. It made, like, a couple guys were like, oh, man, I'm bawling my eyes out of this, because you think it's going to be this big, huge fight scene with Bruce fighting himself, but it turns into this very respectful thing, and it's like, oh, my gosh. Like, you're just crying over this thing, and as soon as I find it, after I get off the show, I'm posting it right away on your wall tonight.
Okay, no problem. Also, I remember your cousin talking about his different teachers that he learned from, so I know most of them, so... who is living
really?
Now, Pat Rice, the Tai Chi teacher, yeah. So she used to have a yearly tournament called a Taste of Tai Chi, you know. So I've known her for over 30-odd years. And then Nick Grayson is another one, Wu Xiu, so I've known him for just as long. And then June Reed, who we studied Taekwondo with, I also know. And,
oh, my God!
Yeah, so you know, these people I go way back with, you know, so quite a few years. So like I said, I was a martial artist first, so you know, I know all the martial artists, so pretty much. So I was gonna, you know, get in there and have a conversation with him, but he left the show. But
oh,
that's
I
all right.
Even know, because it's like I brought you on. I was like, maybe on another show I can have you talk with him, because I haven't seen him since like 1985. The weird thing is, I'm starting to connect with my family on the Montana side, on my father's side, and I saw a picture of him. I actually found my cousin Lance through my Aunt Hazel, and she's from, like, Montana, and I saw a picture of him. I didn't know he did martial arts. I did not know this. I haven't seen him since 1985. He surprised me with the call-in tonight, and I just didn't know, and it's, you know, I was like, okay. I was like, well, thank you for calling, Lance, and I'll just have to have him call on the show, because guys could have a conversation.
Yeah. Well, I'll try to find my other folks. We have branches out there in Montana. I forget what city, but we have a bunch of guys out there as part of our group, our Whip and Willow Association, and they're out in Montana area. So they have a couple schools out that way. So maybe hook up with them later on and check them out and stuff like that.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, the Shaolin Temple. Now, that's another story I was going to talk about. There is really nothing per se as the monks living in Shaolin Temple. There's a few there. But most of these people that are going over there, there's about 100 different martial arts schools outside of Shaolin Temple to claim to be part of the Shaolin Temple. And this is where they're charging an arm and a leg for all these people to come over and say, well, we're part of the Shaolin Temple. And they actually are not. But they are claiming that, and they're teaching under the name of Shaolin Temple. So what they do, they get a license and just say they represent the Shaolin Temple, but they're not actually part of the Shaolin Temple. There are monks there. There are ones that are in the orange robe that you have to really find out. And that they are part of the Shaolin Temple, you know. But there's a lot of schools out there. It's like commercialized. If you go over there, I mean, you'll see hundreds of schools out there. And they're just there just to get you into the train with them, you know. They have people speak English to you and talk to you and teach you different ways. They have different groups coming there for tours and everything. So you have to be aware of that also. So there's a lot of them that they'll teach you stuff, but, you know, but they are not part of the real Shaolin Temple.
That's what I heard. Because I don't know if you've heard of this guy. His name... Don Hinn, and he actually trained over there. There's another guy, Philip Sagon, from the Kung Fu Heroes. They trained over there, and I know the abbot, I forget the guy's name, but Mm-hmm. They call, you know, he's an abbot. And
right.
I don't know if you know the guy I'm talking about, and I thought he was the head of the whole Shaolin Temple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some, like I said, but you got to be careful of which is which and who is real. So you have to really see that. But some of the groups they bring over here, they say they're from the Shaolin Temple. They are not. You know, some have been fake ones that they have brought over also. So you have to be very careful about, you know, checking out the credentials and stuff. I mean, there's a few that did come over that defected, and they went to New York to open up schools in Chicago and so forth. They came with the group from the Shaolin Temple, and they defected, and they stayed here. So there are a few of them that have big schools now that they've been here over 10 years doing that. But most of them, like I said, if you do a little history, if you go on the internet and you'll check it out, and you'll see there's so many hundreds of schools around the Shaolin Temple.
Yeah, so it's kind of like amazing because when they say the Shaolin Temple,
right,
and you look over there and it shows the Shaolin Temple and it shows them in it, and it
mm-hmm.
shows that same abbot, and I can't remember his name, and it shows the same guy. I recognize his face all the time. It's the same guy.
Uh-huh.
And you know, just knowing their training, it's kind of amazing. Like, the feats that they do, I'm just like, they're so, how can I say, they don't shake at all when they're doing things. They must have been training since they were, like, 5 years old.
Yeah, a lot of them start young. So they are there. There's a lot of stuff you can find on YouTube that show the legitimate guys their training and doing all what's called the Qigong exercises or the drills or the stuff where they're breaking the boards on their body and breaking stones on their body, laying on the spears being lifted and so forth. So they have a lot of that kind of stuff there. So there are legitimate ones there. So just if you're actually going to go, you got to make sure it is the legitimate one. So that's why I always tell people, beware. No, don't get taken.
Yeah.
So that's it. You know, you're in a foreign country, don't know what's going on. You don't know. So that's why you have to really find someone that will take you over there, be like a tour guide that know all the people there, and they can, lead you to the real place, you know, so you can actually learn some stuff. But even like the Wushu, you know, they have their training centers also, and they, you know, it depends if that's the style that you want to do. So a lot of there is a lot more fancier, all the twisting and flying through the air and all this stuff. See, the original Shaolin style didn't have all that. Okay, they added a lot of stuff to Wushu art when it came on. They wanted to make all the more show move, more prominent, so they could sell that style. So that's why a lot of people, if you go back to find the old masters, the Wushu, you know, that's not the real one. You know, the old style would be the Shaolin style. But everything now, you know, instead of calling, Wushu, whatever, it's not Kung Fu, it's Wushu. Wushu is better. It's everything. But, you know, you find out a lot of the Wushu schools now in China, none of those guys could really fight. They start importing guys from the United States that are kickboxer, taekwondo, stylists, different people over there to teach them how to fight. Back in the old days, China was known as the fighter. But a lot of those people, when communist China took over in 1948, when Chiang Kai-shek moved to Taiwan and Mao Zedong took over, he was killing all the kung fu instructors. Because he didn't want to have anything to do with these guys, so he knew the upright. Because he himself was a kung fu practitioner. So he knew what the power these guys could do. So that's what a lot of the masters all immigrated to Taiwan, or if they could get out, they went to Hawaii or even to Japan to train over there. So they got out of China, mainland China, because they were getting exterminated. So that's what they had to be careful of. So that's why a lot of them are not there. You can't find a lot of them. A lot of them went up into the mountains, hid away. And that's why a lot of these Wushu style, you go back and you know how many years history did they have of the guys who are teaching the actual Wushu? How far did that art go back? And you can trace it right back to as when communists took over. But prior to that, all the older style Kung Fu style, all those true masters are gone from mainland China. They're in Taiwan or United States now. They're spread all over the world. A lot of them went to Australia. They all got into Hong Kong and so forth. And that's why there's so many Kung Fu school in Hong Kong, because they left mainland China. So it was under British rule, so they were protected there. So mainland China couldn't come in there and do that. But then after they turned it over, So it's a whole different thing now. But still, is you know, everything now is to make money. So, you know, mainland China welcomes all this now. So it's a different thing. So when you go back and look at the history of the martial arts, how a lot of these things started, you know, so I'm going to have a bunch of those guys calling, yelling, and screaming at me soon. I say, hey, know your history. That's the only way you can do it. Mm-hmm. They know what I'm talking about is true.
Yeah, it's with what you were saying, and you made me think about something, and I was like, I think it was during the time, like the film, I think it was Shaolin with Jackie,
mm-hmm.
where he played a cook, and it was showing the monks, they were getting killed. And I wonder if that was around the same time period. And I just cried in that film, and I'm like, but they're very peaceful people. And I'm just like, why? I just don't, I can't understand the hate in this world. And it's like, you know, they didn't do anything. They were just, I mean, they might have trained in martial arts, but they had a very peaceful life. And I can't understand why they want to kill them.
Well, because they knew they had the power. If they wanted to do the uprising, they could do it. And a lot of times, like they said, when the Shaolin Temple, when it first got burned down, a lot of the monks couldn't defend themselves because they poisoned the water, so they couldn't do anything. So their body was only had half the energy, so they couldn't defend themselves. So you have to go back on the history of what happened to the Shaolin Temple. You know, how was it destroyed? You know, how did renegade monks did it? You know, just poisoned the water, and that's what took all the power out of the older monks. And they're the one that had the power, the chi and stuff like that. All the younger guys, they knew how to do physical fighting, but they didn't know about the chi stuff, so the higher art. So that's why a lot of that art was lost later, too. So very much of the old training was lost from there, unless they met, you know, different people that had it from relatives or uncles or people that left the Shaolin Temple that were not at the Shaolin Temple during that time period. So they still carried on with the art. But a lot of the guys, you know, that died with them. So that's why they say that when they burned the Shaolin Temple, the five main students that left there, they called the five ancestors, and they had the five main styles. So they had to put that together again when they met, because no one person had the whole complete art.
Wow.
all that history. All that history. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad, you know, it's like I love sitting here, you know, telling me, you know, stuff about this. I'm just like, you know, I'm like a little kid like learning about this, especially people that actually know, because I try to go on the internet and there's so much stuff where it's like, is this true or is that true?
But yep,
it's nice to know people that actually know things.
Yep. Yep, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. That's why so many people, also worldwide, to claim to know Bruce Lee style and his JKD concept and this stuff, and to claim to learn from him directly. But, you know, it's pretty much you just talk to older guys, all the first generation, second, third generation people. They all know who actually learned from Bruce Lee's system, not directly from Bruce. But there's very few of those guys left. But, you know, a lot of them learn from the first generation students. You know, there's quite a few of them around. And so then you have other people that are not of Bruce art of the JKD system, but of the actual Wing Chun system. So those people have a lot of questioning about each other also, you know, and sometimes they get in a tussle between each other and say, well, we're the original art in this, and, well, we're Bruce Lee's art in this. And, you know, they're all trying to get together and learn. So now a lot of them are now going back and trying to learn the mother art, the Wing Chun system as it was, and incorporate with the JKD, and then the JKD people exchange it with the Wing Chun people also. So they're trying to get more friendlier on that end. But before, it was not like that. Everybody's more superior. You know, everybody wanted to fight it out, wanted to duke it out, wanted to do this. And it's crazy. Even Yip Man, when he passed away, there were so many guys that said, well, I learned directly from him. I am the grandmaster. I am this. There are so many fractions out there that you know, is crazy. And I know the two main ones, you know, I'm friends with both of them. I said, I'll take sides. I know you both. I could care less. You know? We're friends. I said, I don't take sides. So, you know, I pay respect for your system. I pay respect for your system. That's fine. That's it. You respect mine. That's all. I said, I'm not strictly Wing Chun. I mean, I studied the Wing Chun art, but I'm not strictly Wing Chun. I'm into my own White Lotus system, so I always have to push my own system, you know. So I'm not saying theirs is bad. I said, I have elements of your stuff in my system, so, you know, I respect your system. So I don't bite the hand that feed me, you know. Like I tell them, I said, I have that extra cup of knowledge. I got one from the Wing Chun system, one from the JKD system, one from Makita, one from this Kung Fu. I have a whole lot of cups, you know, so I say I respect. So, you know, everybody's like, well, you got to stand behind me. I said, no, I'm not choosing sides. I forget, I'm not into politics. Not into politics, you know.
Since I have you on the air, right, maybe there's something you can also explain, too, where I try to go and explain as much as I can, and I'm trying to learn more and more. And now, from what I heard, Wing Chun, I know there's a movie out there with Michelle Yeoh. No, originally, Wing Chun actually was the name of a woman who was a nun. Wasn't it like a woman form?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ning Wing Chun was her name, and she was the one that invented art. She learned it from a lady monk, okay? And what she did, she converted it. I'm trying to think what the monk's name was. I forget, but her number one student was Wing Chun. That's who she passed it on to. She took the name and passed it on to her. And so she tried to teach her the different ways because, again, the male and the female bodies are completely different. So you have to be able to withstand a person with more power, more strength, more height, more everything else. So it's more based on principle. So that's what the Wing Chun is very good, so that the female could defend themselves, you know, through the principle and ideas. Of course, the guys, you know, if they have the male power, they're going to be real strong with it also. But still, there's many other systems that the female aren't as strong per se fighting wise because you have to have so much strength and you have to swing so hard on it and you have to make some of these long motion that is not ideal for the female body, where the Wing Chun is compact and you can use it. You know, it's a straight nonsense fighting style. You know, it gets to the point. From point A to B is what's the shortest distance, a straight line. So that's what you try to teach a female how to do. So how to do just different angles to get into that person. So a lot of it is based on science. So the Wing Chun's art is very good regarding that. That's why Bruce got into it, because when he was in Hong Kong, when he was younger days, yes, he gets into a lot of fights. And he's fighting different styles. There's Trelly Foot, Hunga style, you know, you name every style, Eagle Claw. There was out there fighting. And, you know, he was getting his butt kicked until he started learning the Wing Chun style. It was strictly mainly for fighting. It's like boxing, just a combat art. There was no thrills or frills behind it all. It was in the Wing Chun art. It was only like three handsets that you learn and a couple weapon set, and that's the whole art. But they had it down perfect where everything was economic emotion. And that's what people don't understand. Because, you know, some of these other styles that I learned also, I mean, you may have 50, 60 forms in there. And it take you a lifetime to learn it. You know, if you have it down well, you're very good at it. You know, you have to have the different concept. So that's why Bruce sort of got away from that, was that he developed his fighting style with no nonsense and incorporated even more scientific principle behind from all the stuff he learned in boxing, in fencing, in yoga. I mean, he picked all kind of techniques, increased his flexibility range. He didn't just stay with regular stretching. So, I mean, he was ahead of his time, and he studied different philosophies to understand how a person's mind worked, you know, how a concept, how they thought, you know, a different way, Eastern way of thinking, Western way of thinking. There's so many different ways. So that's what Bruce is very good at. He can understand all different people from whatever race they came from. But if he had an open mind, he could understand. So that's how he got a lot of his ideas of his system across. So that's one thing about Bruce. He was ahead of his time. I always say that. He was a good guy.
That's what I've heard that too. Like, he was very much ahead of his time. And I mean, it probably would have been nice to have a conversation with him. I probably would have loved that, because I might have drove him crazy.
Yeah, a lot of the guys, when I talk to first-generation students, you know, but they have a lot of private notes that they got from Bruce when he was teaching him, you know, because he was telling him, okay, you do this, you write this down, this is what you need to work on. He gave him step-by-step instructions for each one of the guys. And, you know, when I talked to all of them, they all had different ideas of what Bruce wanted them to work on. And then they had the general philosophy that they follow. And so, you know, they said they just love to sit there. I mean, he just, you know, he just sit there, you know, just hypnotize you as he's talking. And telling you different things, explaining the principle, why you do it this way and not that way. But a lot of guys that went to him came from other martial arts styles. And so he said, well, show me what you got, and I'll show you how to stop it. And that's how Bruce went about it. So he learned from other people what their style was, but after seeing it, he can instantly do the counter. Because he already knew the principle behind what his style was like. Now he wanted to see what the other person was doing. Then he said, oh, okay. So, you know, that's the way my system goes, the same thing. I see it one time, I can counter it already. I see your movement here, I already figure four or five ways how to counter, how to stop it. So, you know, Bruce was pretty much ahead of his time for doing that type of stuff. So, you know, I read his book. I understood his book. You know, I went through a lot of things, and I worked with all of his first-generation students, you know, and picked up a lot of stuff. Like I said, I'm a marching up nut. You know, I want to learn everything from every other style. I could care less. I have no prejudice against any style, Japanese, Korean, Okinawan, you know, Chinese, whatever. And there's hundreds of styles just in the Chinese system. So, you know, whatever's there, you know, if anybody's willing to teach me something, I'm willing to learn. So that's what you got to do. I'm a true martial artist. I love learning. Love learning.
And you got to learn every day.
Every day. That's what my teacher told me, Art Wong. He's one of my most influential teacher in Kung Fu. And he told me, he said, you have to learn something every day, but the day you stop learning something is the day you die. So that's what he told me. He lived to 89 years old. You know, he said, every day I find something I can learn. So I always take that philosophy.
For something like with learning, because there's something I try to, I'm trying to overcome a couple of things. There's like a few things, you know, and I know probably I got to get back and probably in training and stuff. But, you know, with a couple of things, I've always wanted to learn to do a flip. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you can overcome it, not like let anything stop you. And I know like I'm going to have to work out even more. It's the thing is like people, you know, I've never learned how to do that. I learned how to do a cartwheel a couple years ago. The thing that I have, and I'm trying to overcome it, is something called vertigo. And it makes you really dizzy. It's not as severe as a lot of people, but it's like when I'm really, you know, really working on it. I was trying to, when I was in the dojo and trying to, I went into the little kids class. And they were doing this tumbling thing, and it's like it was after I did the workout with my class, I went with the little kids and we went to tumble. And when I went to tumble, the whole room spun, and I had to lay down. It's like I get motion sickness. I can't watch some video games. I get motion sickness. So it's like, I wonder, you know, just think, Aaron, how can I overcome that? It's like you get dizzy and you can't stand up afterwards. It's like there has to be a way to overcome that.
Yeah. There's different things you can do. The main thing is learning to control your breathing, but also learning to set your mind. So there's different things when you do the rolls or tumbling, anything is what's called spotting. You have to spot, you know, because a lot of people get dizzy, even guys that have no problems at all. But if you spot a certain area where they tell you, so that's what's good about learning different arts like judo and aikido. They teach you all the rolls that you need to know, but that's going to get you the first thing besides all the more advanced tumbling. But just getting your basic forward roll, your back roll, your side rolls, and all this stuff, then you have to get over the fear of that. You have to get the idea of what that feels like. And once you get the idea of that, your mind can control everything right there. So, oh, I'm going to feel like this. Well, I'm just going to flip one time. It's going to be one split second. I'll hold my breath. When I come back up, I'm going to be centered. Everything will be fine. That's what we have to teach a lot of kids. When they first go, man, they're walking up dizzy and everything else, same thing. But after you practice a while, you know, so that's why I say it's good maybe to go into a basic judo class or an aikido class where we can teach you some of the basic rules, where they teach you how to do it without falling. You're taking capoeira, so you know the long arm type role where you're doing the cartwheels. But then this is a little bit more, you're closer to the ground. It's not as much fear. But the first time is that when you tuck and pull your head in and you feel your body, your spine go and your butt hit, and then you stand up, or you still stay on the ground. Depends. So, you know, if that's where you hit the ground, you come up standing ready to fight again. But the beginning, you'll roll and then you'll stay on the ground right there. Then we get your mind back together first before you stand up, and then you're fine. But yeah, that's some basic one you should do, is learn some basic judo or basic aikido, and that will help center your body and your mind. And then when you want to go do parkour and free running, some of the more advanced stuff, you have some of that fear already gone. You have some of the ideas also. So, but, you know, like at our studio now, my son said we have a guy, I think he's 58 years old. Just started about 6 months ago, and he's doing parkour, and he's just like, he's a champ, you know, like there's no fear. So, you know, age has nothing to do with it. You just got to get in there to do it, you know. Of course, he has some other background before, but, you know, once you get your basic background, age, it has nothing to do with it, nothing at all. So just got to get over the basic fear first, or the basic physical limitation that you have, so that you can overcome it. That's the whole thing. See,
yeah,
that's why Bruce said, I don't have no physical limitations. He conquered everything. If there was something that he couldn't do, he'd go to 150% until he got it. So that's what
he
did.
Yeah, he was crazy. He was nuts. He was just, like, the thing that I love about you guys, right? Now, I'm a spaz. I have this crazy energy. Then I see, like, senseis and, like, you guys who probably can kick really good butt, but you're so, like, you're very energetic and very positive, but I tend to notice martial arts that have been doing it for years, you're so, how can I say, like, it's laid back. You guys are kind of crazy in a way, but you're very, like, laid back. I'm spastic all over the place, but you have this center that I like, and it's like, that's why I like teachers and stuff, because you guys all have this center, and I go, that's what I want for myself, and I try to focus on that, but it seems like I'm always going to be a spaz, which I don't think it's bad, but I'd like to be a little bit more center, and I'm trying to be like how I see you guys, and you're just so very centered, and that's what I'm trying to get to be like.
Well, you're getting closer to Montana, you're getting closer to the West Coast. One day we'll get together, and I'll show you some things.
Cool.
We'll teach you some advanced meditation exercises, center yourself and everything, bring your chi power up and everything. So, you know, you're getting closer. Boston's still a long ways out. Oh, you're not in Boston, you're in Maine now. But,
I'm in Maine.
Yeah.
I'll be there, and so much closer to so many things, Comic-Cons, you know, sci-fi conventions, everything's closer out there. So there's so much going on, and reconnection with a lot of my family and stuff that I'll be able to do. I haven't seen in like 15 or 20 years to like reconnect with my father, even though I've been talking with them. And the one thing, it sounds so silly, but my dad, I swear to God, he's kind of like, he doesn't do any martial arts, but he has that sensei thing where he's very humble, but his health is good. He's like, he's going to be 70. He's still riding horses. And I was like, I'm going to get up on horse and ride with my dad. It's something, that little tiny thing I want to do. It's just something, I was like, I want to just do that. I want to go because this is it. I don't want to regret anything. I says, you know, with what you say and what Bruce says, Bruce Lee, I try to read his quotes. I have his Way of the Warrior book. I've had it for many years, and I've read it a couple of times, and I keep trying to go back to that book, and that's like a Bible for me. So I keep trying to read the Way of the Warrior and, you know, stuff like his quotes and everything, and I try to keep remembering that, you know, try to remember things to be better balanced. And I thank you so much, you know, for calling on my show tonight. And I know I got to get up to go to the film set tomorrow.
Okay.
and I do appreciate you calling in, and I hope have you on my show again.
Okay, no problem. You know, I'll call you when I have some time. I'll come and surprise you again. You never know.
Oh, great. Well, thank you, and you're welcome anytime, Douglas.
Okay, Shelley, you take care of yourself.
Okay, all righty. Bye-bye.
All right, good night. Bye.
Well, that was really cool. A really cool show. It's like 12:30 here, and I gotta get up early tomorrow for Felkir. This is like, these are the awesome shows, and you know, doing a dedication to Bruce Lee, and I have to say to, well, you know, to Brandon Lee too, because it's just like, it just seems like, you know, what is it? How many years? Bruce Lee, it was 40 years of his passing, and Brandon Lee, it's 20 years of his passing, and I want to do something in honor of Brandon Lee to hope to do a photo shoot of The Crow. The Crow's one of, I know it sounds strange, but I just like, I like The Crow, one of my favorite all-time films. And I just, you know, in my own way, I wanted to dedicate something to Bruce Lee and also to Brandon Lee, and just feel very lucky that I'm able to do that. And so, you know, Bruce Lee, if you're... If somehow you're watching over me from the heavens, this show's dedicated to you tonight. So, you know, I wish I had that opportunity to, you know, had a chance to sit and talk with Bruce Lee. But it's really kind of cool to be able to talk with people who got to talk with Bruce Lee and to hear these stories. So I guess that is a blessing in itself, and I feel very blessed and very lucky to be able to do that. Well, I get a... go to bed, drink some tea, go to bed, and get ready to work on Felkir. Saturdays, every day I'm on set. So everyone, remember, if you have a dream, just remember you're as good as anybody else, and you go for it. And it was really a great show. Once again, thank you to my cousin Lance, who surprised me with calling in the beginning of the show. Thank you once again to Douglas Wong and everybody out there that has listened to my show tonight, everyone in the chat room. Thank you very much for being there. And, you know, thank you all for tuning into my show. And I will try to keep bringing guests in. And everyone, just have a good night. As you can tell, I'm very tired. Anyway, I am ending the show with a song, once again, by Pisces Project, Horrors of Cora DeLisa and his beautiful, lovely wife, Sonaria, singing together battle song, which is from our film, Felkir, for our battle scene. And like with anything with music, it helps set the mood. And when you hear battle song, you'll hear it is that type of song for a battle and a fight scene. So anyway, everyone, have a good night. I turn.